You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Stephen Henderson. And as always, thanks for tuning in. We're in the dining room of the Grand Hotel on Mackinac Island during the Detroit Regional Chamber's annual Mackinac Policy Conference. We're up here for the first time since 2019 in May because of the disruption of the COVID-19 pandemic. Most of the political leaders from Southeast Michigan and many from Lansing and Washington are here. A lot of our business leaders from around the state are here. A lot of the philanthropic leaders are here. Our next guest is a pretty frequent guest here on Detroit Today, and someone we almost always try to talk to when we're up here on Mackinac. Brenda Lawrence is a congresswoman who represents Michigan's 14th district in Washington. Congresswoman, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thank you so much. And I make a point to find you when I'm up here so we can have some meaningful.
I was going to say, we have such great conversations up here. And I think that's proof that this conference does have value, right?
It does.
I feel like we talk differently.
We do.
When we're up here than we do when we're back home.
Yes.
So let's start with you. You've decided not to seek re-election, which means that you will be leaving us in terms of elected public service.
Exactly.
Talk about that decision and what it means.
You know, there is, and I refer to the biblical description, there's a time and season for everything in your life.
Yeah.
I've had an amazing ride in public service. It's defined me, it has challenged me, and it has really given me opportunities. I want to continue to serve and be part of making this world a better place, be hopeful. But I can do that in somewhere else other than elected office.
Mm-hmm.
Elected office has its limitations, and it also has a tremendous amount of prowess and spaces that you can go into. But I'm excited about this next chapter. I like to tell everyone it's like reading a really, really good book, and you can't wait to turn the page for the next chapter.
Wow.
So that's where I am.
Yeah. So, I mean, you leave quite a legacy behind, of course, in Congress. But let's talk about how your district has changed over the time that you represented it. It's a strange district. It's maybe one of the strangest districts we've ever seen drawn here in the state of Michigan. You're the second person to represent us in that district, and now that's going to go away and have something different.
Yes.
But talk about what it has been like to try to represent people who live along the Detroit riverfront alongside people who live in Pontiac. There's such disparate places.
So if I could just paint the picture for the listeners, I represent all five of the Grosse Pointes, Hopper Woods, the city of Detroit, then Hamtramck. Then I cross 8 Mile Road, which is significant. So I go to another county, and it's Royal Oak Township, Oak Park, Southfield, Farmington Hills, West Bloomfield, Keego Harbor, Orchard Lake, Sylvan Lake, and Pontiac. So when you hear those cities, you immediately think about the wealth that's associated with some and the economic challenges associated with others. It's amazing diversity. And, you know, I always felt like when I walked in the room and I spoke, I was representing America.
Yeah.
Because the diversity that I represent, I understand building wealth and economic development, small business. Also understand poverty, social services, educational challenges. I have one of the best school districts in the country, and I have some of the most challenged in the country. And the education, just based on a border of a city, is totally different. And so I have to work really hard to spin my head around to make sure I'm hearing all the voices. And that has made me a better elected official, and I feel a better person as a result of that.
Yeah. So I also want to talk about the news, which of course is pretty grim these days, and Congress is being asked what it can do. Mm-hmm. We had another mass shooting last night in Tulsa, Oklahoma, this time at a hospital. Each time, it's at a different place that
it's
you're
at
like
a sacred place.
What is going on? You should be able to go to these places without fearing for your life. What's possible, I think, is the question. What can we actually do that would reduce the likelihood of these things happening? And then when I say possible, I mean politically possible. I mean, you've got two very different perspectives on the idea of gun ownership in this country, I think. And the Republican Party is dug in many ways, and the idea that that right to own a gun is as near absolute as any other.
As life itself in some situations.
Right, and that there just isn't something we can do.
So one of the things that, if I could do anything, it would transfer this passionate love of a gun. I often question people, what does that do for you? How does it make you feel, the fact that you own a gun? Because I see people who are almost in love with guns as they are with their wife, their spouse, or significant other. Mm-hmm. They love their guns. I had a coworker, and I'm going to tell you how transformational my thought process was. And I was telling him, because he was a gun manufacturer and he had been elected to Congress. So I made a point to beeline to him and say, I want to have a discussion about guns.
I want to understand that.
Yes. And he said his 5-year-old daughter asked for a gun for her birthday. And I said, really? And I said, what did you say? He said, well, I said, when your fingers are big enough to pull the trigger, I'll buy you a gun. And when she was like 7, he bought her a pink gun. She's 16 now, so she has 4 guns. And I'm saying, I would put you in jail if you bought a gun for a 5-year-old.
Yeah.
I think that's awful. Why would a child want
a gun?
What
does she need with it? Yeah.
What do you gain from that? But, you know, in my mind, it is not normal for a human being to want something that kills something, to be so passionate about it. And you know, we have almost more guns in America than we do people.
We do, yeah. 400 million guns, yeah.
And we're going back to the Wild Wild West. You watch Westerns, and when we had a debate on those Westerns, we stood in the middle of the street, and we stood and we shot at each other. Mm-hmm. And it was considered, okay, a dead body was drawn. But get back to the legislation. We definitely have to address red flags. Mm-hmm. I don't see how anyone can disagree with that. If I, as a person who's close to you, see behavior, witness violence in other ways, that I wouldn't report you and say you don't need to own a gun.
Yeah.
So we have an opportunity there. Background checks, please. What is the problem with that? To say someone is, you do it for a car. And a car is not designed to kill something. You cannot drive a car in America without getting a driver's license. And it has to be renewed. And it's age restrictions on it. Mm-hmm. And then once you buy it and pay for it, you have to wear a seatbelt. You have to adhere to laws. And we adapt to that. And then the other thing that people are so uncomfortable, I think we should harden our schools. We, after 9/11, we hardened our airports. You remember the time you could walk all the way to the gate with your loved one. Now everyone is screened. And once you get on the other side of that, we know you do not have a gun on you. I'm sorry, I don't like the look either. If being a person of resources, I wouldn't want my child to have to go through that, but I don't want my child to come home in a body bag either. And make them pretty. Put dinosaurs on or Elmo or something. But we're going to have to create a system where when our children walk into the building, we know they're safe.
Wow. Wow. I mean, that's such a hard image to get my mind around. And I know there's a real debate about how we manage security in schools and if we turn them into jails or prisons by putting up
prisons,
metal detectors.
Our airports aren't prisons.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I I tend to fall down on that side. But do you think that if we did those things, things would change? And I guess what I'm asking is, are we also dealing with, and I think we should do all of those things because they mm-hmm. make sense. And guns should be regulated like other property, in my mind. But do we have a bigger cultural problem right now that inspires too many people to think, well, I'm going to go kill those people because I don't like them, because I don't like what color they are, I don't like what religion they are, whatever the reason is.
Well, we could really go deep into where we are in America, and this whole conference has talked about civility, right? So we know that it has been legitimately approved for people to hate each other.
Sure.
You know, like, you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, we should hate each other. I'm pro-choice, you are anti-choice, we should hate each other. I'm gay, you straight, we should hate each other. And it's just constant messaging that we do. So that's what's so powerful about this conference. Mm. The business community has been programmed to, if you make money, you're successful. Mm. And everything you do is okay. Where the business community has been complicit in a lot of these issues because of their silence. Because at the end of the day, I don't want to talk about it. I don't see it because I'm making money. Mm. You know, I may not treat my workers well, but look at my bottom line. I can discriminate against people because I have enough workers. And yeah, I didn't give people that color or that race a job, but guess what? I got enough people here and I'm making money. And so to introduce the concept of responsibility for the climate and the civility in our country to corporate America, I think is brilliant, is timely. But mental health, we keep talking about that. You can't walk away from this without talking about mental health.
No.
And I think I shared with you in one of the shows, I had a town hall on mental health. And a therapist who was on my panel said, I have a T-shirt. It says, I go to church, I worship God, and I see my therapist.
Yeah, right.
Because in the black community, I can say that, you know, they'll say, oh, baby, you just need to pray. That's just the devil working. Yeah. And you'll
There's
be all right.
Barrier.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, you crazy? You going to see a therapist?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you have diabetes, you need to go see your doctor. You need to take your medicine. Girl, what's wrong with you?
Mm-hmm.
But when you see the mental health issues, we are not encouraging the same health that you can get as you would with a physical health care doctor.
Mm. So I do want to talk about what's next for you. You have been in public service your entire
years.
Life, really, right? Your job was was a public service
true.
Job, and then mm-hmm. you started to serve people in elected positions.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do when you walk away from this?
I am going to find a way to continue to serve. I'm going to do something I wish more people in the public life would do, and that is to speak up when things aren't right. For some reason, they think it's only the politician's responsibility to address inequities or someone in the media. But as a private citizen, I feel I have a responsibility to continue to call out those things and to address them and get involved in dialogue. I want to teach. I'm a firm believer I have not been given these opportunities and experiences to just go home and plant flowers. So I want to find a way to teach and to influence the next generation. And I'm going to serve on some boards and just keep my fingers into what's moving in the community.
Yeah, I know you will not disappear. What about your new district? There's a lot of people who say they want to represent that district.
Yes.
And you've chosen to endorse one of those people. But mm-hmm. I'm also curious what you think of what they did with the lines this time. Again, your district was strange to us when it was drawn,
yes.
and we were like, ah, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You made it work.
Yeah.
What about these new lines?
Well, after living through almost a decade of this crazy Huron district. No, these lines don't make they don't make sense. We thought moving it from political power to draw the lines to a commission, and we're still in a place where I fundamentally believe that the way the seats are drawn, you're reducing the opportunity for black people to represent themselves. Mm. And it's been deliberate, and I heard really directed conversation to keep communities of interest is how they labeled it together. But it seems to be okay to split up the black community. And then there's the issue of the census, which the black community was undercounted.
Yeah. I don't know how you make those numbers work for the next 10 years. Right?
Exactly. Yeah. And we're fighting it now, but you know, we're hoping for a mid-decade change.
Sure.
But I'm supporting Duggan and the team, and we're fighting these the numbers because we know it was clearly an undercount, and it has been validated that there was an undercount in Detroit.
Yeah. Okay, Brenda Lawrence, I'm going to miss these talks, but you had to swear when you're out of office, you will still come by and see us.
Absolutely. And I just want to say throughout the years, having media that is intelligent, compassionate, and deliberate in promoting the conversation. Sometimes I would cringe because you would bring up issues that,
I wish I didn't have to talk about it.
But that is so important to who we are as a democracy. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Godspeed to you. And when I call, you better take my call.
Always will. Always will.
Okay.
Okay.
Take care.
You too. That is going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow to talk more about the Mackinac Policy Conference on Mackinac Island. This is 101.9 WDET-FM, Detroit's NPR station, your connection to news, music, and conversation. We'll talk again tomorrow.